Hey, all you rad dads out there.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Brett here, bringing you another episode of The Rad Dads Show, the parenting podcast where we ask inspiring dads the question, what does it mean to be a rad dad? Today, I'm excited to bring you something special. Rad dad, teacher, and longtime friend and supporter of the podcast, Dallas, brings his conversation with his friend, the great David Cross, to the podcast. You know David Cross from his unforgettable role as Dr. Tobias Funke, an Alrapist, on Arrested Development, or from Mr. Show with Bob Odenkirk, or his multitude of other TV, movie, and stand-up appearances. He's just the best. So hot on the heels of his new special, Worst Daddy in the World, which is on Veeps and now on YouTube, David sat down with Dallas to chat about his experiences as a dad to his 7-year-old daughter, Marlo. David's known as one of the world's greatest comedians, but he and Dallas kind of get serious about parenting on this one. And they dig into the importance of healthy peer pressure for kids, parenting through a pandemic, how to stay energized and take care of your mental health as a dad, and even LARPing. This is a really great one, and we're so thankful to Dallas and David for bringing this conversation to our platform. So make sure to check out David's stand-up special, Worst Daddy in the World, which is out now on YouTube, and we'll provide links to that in our link tree. And also his podcast, Senses Working Overtime, where he chats with friends like Fred Armisen, Michael Cera, Rob Delaney, Janine Garofalo, and even his own wife, Amber Tamblyn. But for now, let's chat with David about dad stuff. What are we waiting for? Here's David Cross speaking with Rad Dad Dallas on the Rad Dads Show.
My name is Brandon Tolliver. My stage name is David Cross. I've dabbled.
Brandon, do you mind if I ask you what you dabble in?
Performing arts and multimedia presentations.
Like, are we talking Photoshop or are we talking?
Yep, Adobe Photoshop. And McAfee's, safety, security apps.
Do you consider yourself a rad dad?
No, I would never utter those words out loud. I wouldn't even think them. I don't think the word rad I've ever used or even written. If I were to write, like, children's cartoons and they were kids in junior high, then I might write rad down for one of the characters to say, but as a actual adult, no.
What do you think of the rhyme?
The rhyme rad dad?
Rad dad, yeah.
I prefer radical dadical.
Yours is 6 now, hey? Or 7?
She'll be Marlo? 7 in about 2 months.
Cool. Grade 1?
First grade, yeah.
Yeah. How's it going so far?
Very good. I mean, she doesn't like homework, but she's in a school. She goes to a great school. It's down the street. We walk, I take her there and walk there and pick her up and, and it's a great school. So we got very lucky.
She gets homework in grade 1.
Yeah, all the parents have talked about that. It's real homework. I mean, they're doing spelling tests and math tests and sentence comprehension and stuff like that. Yeah, it's more intense than I remember it being, but,
Yeah, no kidding. Is she reading yet? I guess probably, huh?
Yeah, she can read. Yeah. I mean, nothing beyond the kind of simple stuff, but she can definitely read it. The next big hope is that without pushing her to it, she just takes to it on her own. She wants to read,
Yeah.
She's still having us read her bedtime stories and stuff, which is fine, but Hopefully she'll just want to start reading on her own, pick up a book and read, you
That was the hope for me as well. And man, it didn't happen until she saw that her friends were reading and
Yeah.
had like graphic novels and stuff. And then she was like, oh, starting.
I think that's part of it. I guess I'm hoping that that's part of it, because I know some of the kids, there's a kid in her class who's always bringing in comic books, kid comic books, but and always showing them around. So, hopefully that that has some effect, positive effect, and she wants to do the same thing. When
Yeah.
peer pressure is good.
Sometimes. Sometimes. What do you think are radical dadical traits one could have, such as yourself?
I guess doing ollies in the park, maybe drum circles now and then, making weed butter. Gosh, what else? Being really good at the devil sticks,
Do you have a tightrope?
fish cover band, like a fish cover band.
Oh, fish cover.
What else would make you a rad dad?
You
I
know
guess
those
road
tight
gear.
ropes that you can tie between trees?
Yes. Oh man, I saw those in when I was in Toronto. We were by a really lovely park, little park called Trinity Bellwood area, and it's a great area. And and every day there'd be some guy would come down, when it was warmer, and they drew the circles that allowed you to go to the park if you
Right. Yeah.
remained in your circle.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was always somebody,
A tightrope.
tied it up between two trees and then did tightrope
you
stuff
spent
all every time.
sorry. Have you spent a lot of time in Montreal?
I have, yeah, over the years, going back to the 90s, yeah.
Have you ever been to a Tam Tam on Mount Royal?
I don't think so. What's that?
Drum circles, tight ropes, devil sticks.
Oh, is that the park and up in the plateau?
Yeah.
That little, oh yeah.
But
Okay, sure.
there's also a lot of LARPing up there.
Oh
You can
gosh.
see these dudes. It was the first time I'd ever heard the term LARPing. Like, what do you mean LARPing? And a friend of mine took me up there, and sure enough, like, I don't know if you've ever seen live LARPing when people
I
are
mean,
like, fire
not
spell, fire
live, but
spell.
it's, yeah, I love it. I love the idea of it. It makes me laugh. God bless them.
It's kind of awesome in its own way. I mean, I guess it's just they call it cosplay now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But I like LARPing as a, it sounds like what it is.
It does.
Yeah.
Do you have any like family in New York, or does she have any cousins or anything there?
Actually, one cousin just moved here about a year ago, and she loves her. She's 21, I think, I want to say. And she'll come over and babysit occasionally, and she just loves her. And we got a full house right now. I got my mom and my sister and my sister-in-law here for the holidays, up from Atlanta. And I think that's it for, and I have like a third cousin or something like that who's here occasionally, but that's it for family. You don't have a whole lot outside of those, but all people are always coming here. There's always, my in-laws or my family, or there's people here all the time.
Right on. You probably have like a network of people with little kids and stuff that she kind of hangs out with regularly.
Oh yeah, I mean, we're in Brooklyn too, which is very family friendly, and we know people across the street in the building across the street. We know obviously her classmates, friends of ours that have kids that are same age, so there's plenty of play dates and activities and stuff like that.
Nice. I've only been to New York that one time, but I noticed like a lot of the places are pretty small. So I envision like parents getting out of the house with their kids a lot. in New York for play dates and things? Is that kind of
Well,
the
there's
thing?
a, you know, there's a playground every 2, 3 blocks. You can't go a couple blocks without seeing a playground. And every school has a playground attached to it that you can play in, you know, regardless of whether you go to that school. So there's lots of parks. I'm about a 10-minute walk from Prospect Park, which is the huge, big, beautiful park in Brooklyn. I'm 12 minutes away, the other end from Fort Greene Park, and so there's all kinds of areas for the kids to play in.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to do to explore how you managed COVID, like parenting through COVID, I guess.
Well, it was exceptionally hard because I will say I think we got extremely lucky that she was the age she was at during COVID, because I have a great number of friends who have kids that are older, and it really messed them up, you know, and it was really tough for a lot of those kids, you know. I mean, when COVID started, she was 3, and then when it was over, she was what, 4 and a half? But we were in New York for the beginning of it, which was in the very, very, very beginning, at least in the States. It was really scary, and nobody knew what was going on, and people were dying like left and right, and we were on lockdown, and there were curfews, and you would just hear sirens constantly. We're on kind of on the corner of two kind of major thoroughfares, and just sirens all the time, and you know, freezer trucks that they were storing body bags in. I mean, it was crazy, and nobody, you know, we didn't know what was going on, and there was no vaccine yet, and Trump was president, so that wasn't helpful. And you know, everybody had to wear a mask, but she was 3 and a half, so she just did it. So I think that way we're lucky. There was no, that was just the norm. And then as stuff was starting sub to subside in New York, we because my wife had a job in Toronto, we had to move to Toronto for 6 months while she shot the show. And as New York was easing up by then, Toronto was on, you know, ultra super lockdown. And Doug Ford was just a disaster, and terrible, just terrible. And everything, every decision he made was wrong.
Still up to it. He's still up to it.
And you know, we had the 14-day quarantine every time if somebody went back and forth, which was rare, but you had a quarantine again for 14 days, which is when we were in a stranger's Airbnb. In a place that was completely shut down, and we had to stay in there for 14 days, and they really put the fear of God into you. Like, if we come around and you're, you know, not doing the protocol, we'll kick you out of the country and all this stuff. And you know, the job was very important to my wife, so we had to do it. And we were in this weird, I shouldn't say weird, but you know, foreign to us, house, somebody else's house, and you couldn't leave for 14 days, and we didn't know the neighborhood, we didn't know anything, and it was just a very strange time. And what I'll always remember from that is I lost 7 pounds in those 2 weeks because I wasn't out drinking as much, and or at all, really. And I, my wife and I had a system where I would take Marlo from the morning up until her nap, her afternoon nap, which she doesn't have anymore, but and then, you know, after lunch, and then my wife would take her for the remainder of the afternoon, evening. And there's like this little basement, and we just ran around. I would have to, you know, spend hours, you know, literally hours, just being, all right, pretend to be the dog that ran away from its owner, and pretend to be a cat that's in the street, and I'm going to chase you, and you chase me, and da 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 da. And just hours and hours of that. And as I said, in those 2 weeks, I lost 7 pounds from just, you know, being locked in a house with a kid, with a 3.5, 4-year-old.
Yeah.
Well, it was, she was close to four. She turned four in Toronto. So closer to four, but yeah.
Yeah. That's intense, man. That's like bringing back memories.
And it was equally frustrating because New York, you know, had started opening up, and they, you know, as the winter months became spring and it became warmer, like they had this open streets plan where they blocked off streets and there were like big street parties. And there was one around the corner from us in Brooklyn. And, and it, people are going to do shows and do stand up. And I couldn't, there was nothing to do. Toronto was locked down. And my wife was like, just go and see if you can do stand up, go to, you know, see if Alberta or Vancouver, and no place was available. Nothing was open, but you know, I'd get pictures or videos from friends that were in New York, like, hey man, we're missing you. We're out here on the, on Vanderbilt Avenue. We've got a pizza and some beer and
right.
Wish you guys were here. And I'm like, oh man, just listening to Doug Ford.
Oh man. I got kind of lucky with that because, my sister lives up in the Yukon, hey? And, of course everything here, you know, everything's all taped off and I'm working from home and Brianna's working from home and Ophelia was in kindergarten at the time. And, you know, again, pretty intense when it's week after week of that.
Yeah.
So my sister's like, hey, there's no cases up here. And the parks aren't taped off or anything. Why don't you come up here? So I got to drive Ophelia up there and I think we're up there for 3 or 4 weeks and I was just teaching from my
That's
sister's
great.
Yeah, basement. Yeah. And like she's running around with the cousins because she's got her cousins up there and stuff. And
yeah, great. Yeah. I'm sure it's beautiful too.
Oh, it's gorgeous, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. You been to Alaska or anything?
I have not, no.
No. Do you even care? Is it on your radar at all?
Yeah, I'd like to go. It's one of those things where, especially, you know, specifically now that I have a kid, like you don't just pop into Alaska and do some sets. You know, like, you know, it's,
totally.
It's a good, you know, if I'm going to do some shows there, then it's a good 5, 6 days that I got to be away for that one show. So it's kind of got to be worth my while. So, but I would love to play Alaska. Yeah. 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 Why not?
Before I became a dad, my partner got me this book cause I was all nervous and it was actually called Rad Dads. And there were a bunch of essays from like cool punk dudes or whatever. Ian MacKaye to name, you know, one of the heavier hitters on there. What I took from that was how important it is if you're like involved in kind of unique things to involve your kids as much as you can.
Sure. Yeah.
What has Marlo gotten to the stage yet where you're like kind of getting her involved in anything?
Nothing major. Like I just started a podcast, you know, literally just weeks ago. And I asked her to come up with a bunch of questions that I could ask my guests. And that's she's quite often doesn't want to participate in too much. But she was very good about that. And then, we all, my wife and, Marlo and I danced to the new Jay Mascis song, and that's part of his video. So you see her dancing around and looking in the cell phone camera. Outside of that, she doesn't really, you know, she doesn't like to be put on the spot. That's for sure. She'll do some really funny stuff,
yeah,
you know, for us at home. And then when somebody comes over, like, oh, Marlo, you got to show Veronica the thing. And she doesn't want to do it,
yeah,
which is fine. And we don't push her to do it, you know?
Oh yeah. I found that. And of course, yeah, the more you push them, the more they're like, nope.
Yeah.
I bought her a drum kit when she was like 3 or 4. She's just like, no. I'd like, come on, let's play some drums. She's like, no. And then recently I'll be down here just kind of messing around. She'll have a friend over and then they'll come down and they'll decide they want to play drums.
Good. Yeah.
Like, okay, I guess I'm playing drums with a couple 8-year-old girls now. or playing music with a couple 8-year-old girls, and it's kind of well, it's kind of awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine that'd be
Yeah.
great.
They like, have their own idea of what rhythm is, and yeah, just like the other day we like wrote a song, these two girls on drums, and then I was just on bass or whatever, and it was super fun. But yeah, like try to push it on her. No way. Let
That's
come.
a mistake.
Yeah. So people can get an idea of your journey of fatherhood. Where were you in your career when you had or decided to have kids? Did you decide to have kids, or did it just
Yes.
happen? Yeah.
And we were trying for a while. I mean, I was it the actual birth came at a inopportune time. But we worked around. I was in the middle of shooting a show in London. And not just acting. I was directing it, and I had written it. So I was, there was no like, I'm gonna go home for 10 days while you guys shoot other scenes. So I was, had to be there, kind of on call and doing stuff 12 hours a day every day. But it didn't, it, you know, I think because of a lot of what I do with stand up, it takes me, anywhere from 3 to 6 months to develop the material. And I do that in Brooklyn. I mean, I have a, there's like five rooms that I go to and that I can walk to or ride my bike. And I just, that's a third to half of my year is just, Tuesday night at 7:30, I go do a set and I tape it and I, listen to it and I just start that process, and then that results in a tour. But up until I go out on tour, I mean, I'm here. I have all the places I need to do sets, within a 15-minute bike ride away in any direction. So I always said I'm very lucky, and I would guess that I have spent more time with my kid than I'm going to say 90% of American dads, if not more. And I work from home when I have to write, if I have a writing thing. The only thing that takes me away is when I have to shoot something that's in a different state or country, and then again you go back and forth, you carve out time. It's I don't work a 9-to-5 job, and I'm not a salesman or anything like that. So it hasn't really intruded that much, except for in the very, very beginning. And when I went out on tour in 2000 18, was that when I do the, oh yeah, 2018, I guess, at the end of 18, she was 18, 19, I guess. She was on the tour bus,
Oh, I remember that. She was here.
And then the last tour I did, which I just finished in October, but that went from March through October, that I would just go out for, 4 or 5 days, come home for 3 or 4 days, go out, come back. And now that she's in school, and it was kind of, not that difficult. It was a pain in the ass, but whatever. I racked up a lot of points. I started the tour Delta on my Delta, just Delta. I was silver medallion. I ended it as a platinum pro or whatever that level is.
We don't have Delta, so
Started
what is
silver
the
and I ended up platinum. That tells you how many flights I took. That's just Delta.
what is that in we don't have Delta, so I'm trying to imagine the WestJet equivalent or something.
Well, all my stuff was either Delta, American, United, and then I was doing stuff in Toronto back and forth, so the occasional Air Canada. which has a code share with United.
Okay.
Yeah.
You said something interesting, which I'm kind of thinking, well.
I did?
You said something thought-provoking. Let's go with thought-provoking. Because I've been thinking of this a lot lately in the classroom and just thinking about how much time I spend with my kids as opposed to the time that I spend with my own kid. And the kind of unfortunate reality that I think a lot of parents face when they work like a 9-to-5 job where you're spending so much energy working or whatever, and then you come home and you don't necessarily have the energy, especially as like an older dad.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Energy.
I get that. Yeah.
For your kid that you wished you had or whatever. Is there anything you do or kind of abstain from to keep you energized for that time?
I do have a kind of, I would say, more energy than most people my age and always kind of have. You know, when I was in my 30s and 40s, you know, now that I'm in my late 50s, I mean, people are always surprised at how old I am. And I don't know, I was just born with that extra reserve of energy. So I think if I had another kid and we had talked about it, then I would worry about, oh man, what am I, you know, 10 years from now, what am I going to be? What's it going to be like? I don't know how much I can do that stuff, but right now it's not difficult. And, you know, I still run around with her and we still rough house as we call it. And I throw her on the bed and, you know, she jumps on me and I toss her off and, you know, and all that stuff. And, that hasn't really been an issue.
Right, you know?
And again, because I'm not working, you know, I'll have occasional times where I'll just be exhausted kind of emotionally or that's not the right word, but just, you know, cause you've been writing or been doing something that's kind of frustrating or you're not that into and you've been doing it all day. And then you're just like, I just need to chill out. And then, you know, my wife will take over and vice versa. My wife's had this similar thing. It's just like, all right, I'll hang out with her for now and you just chill out or sleep in or whatever the thing is, you know?
Yeah. I like to give myself timeouts, and Ophelia really understands that. That's like, dad needs a timeout. Can't do it right now. Yeah. It's kind of neat. A few of these questions that I have could possibly relate to that the special that you just put out, which I saw the other day, which is great.
Thank you.
I loved the subtle dead kid Jesus foot sweep at the end.
Oh yeah.
Intercept.
Yeah.
It was so great. For the people who maybe haven't seen your special, in what ways has fatherhood changed you that you can think of?
Well, I mean, I do address that, albeit in a, you know, sarcastic way sometimes, but in the special, but I think the biggest way it's changed me is I have to be more patient in all aspects of my day to day, and I have to. It's made me less constantly cynical and pessimistic. I've had to. It's forced me to find hope and optimism where I necessarily wouldn't. My mind wouldn't go there, you know. But now that there's a innocent kid who is just a new person with a you know, an idea, a worldview that's changing and growing and evolving. And I don't want to introduce my adult cynicism and pessimism, you know?
I can relate to that. It kind of breaks my heart sometimes in the classroom when I'll hear one of my kids, you know, a 10-year-old kid, just like, yeah, the world's full of like idiots anyways, or like, we're all screwed anyways. I'm like, man, like, who's putting that information in your brain? Like,
yeah,
you're too little
yeah.
for that, you know?
Yep.
So here's something I noticed actually from your new special. It seemed to me like a little more self-reflective than your previous specials. Is that true? Was that intentional, or was I?
I wouldn't say it was intentional, but it might be true. I'm not. I would have to. Yeah, maybe a little. I don't know.
And I guess I was wondering if that was a product of age or fatherhood, because the times I thought that in your special were the times where you were kind of talking more along the lines of, your relationship with Marlo.
I suppose so. I mean, I don't think it was intentional. It just, you know, as I say at the very end, like the preface to that last closing bit, you know, the show, as you're creating it and as you're doing it and you're crafting it, as it were, to be pretentious for a second, but you know, this show, I realized after it had occurred that, oh, there seems to be kind of a theme here. And that's what I address at the end. And that's probably, you know, because of the subject matter, which I used having a kid as kind of a thread throughout the show, to get me back into either some silly stuff or some more pointed stuff. And I never really had that in any of the other specials I did. It didn't seem to kind of come back around, you know, and I guess that's just a natural result of, and you know, a lot of the stuff I do is pretty, you know, confessional in a sense. And so maybe it just lent itself to that, and that's just what ended up happening. But yeah, it's not anything I didn't set my mind to having that be a part of the show, you know.
Right.
But I'm happy with it. I'm happy that it did present itself, and I was like, oh, okay, this is cool.
Yeah. I thought so too. Another thing you talked about were kind of aspects of your personality that you've kind of had to reconcile since becoming a dad, like difficult aspects of your personality, which everybody I'm sure goes through. Are there any like any other ones, I guess, that you didn't mention or that you've
well I mean aware I of? I mean my irritability, my I can become very irritable, and I don't express myself as readily as I should, so I swallow a lot of that and internalize, and then have these interior monologues which are poisonous. And and I, you know, I'm on this medication that I've been on and off since, anti-anxiety medication that I've had since the 90s, and I got back on it once my daughter started going to school, because I found myself doing that kind of hyper, like, especially like there were two things that kept happening. One was when I was getting her ready for school, and you know, there's a drop off and you got to get them by 8:20. That's when they're supposed to be in the school. And And I was just like, I'm talking to this kid going like, get your shoes on. You got to get your shoes. We're going to be late, and just like, it wasn't cool. Like I wasn't, I was, and I've always been prone to that, we got to go. That's now I don't have my glasses and whatever. And that, and then we, would play these video games. All these video games for kids, these like teaching things and some really corny cloying saccharine shit about, it's important to like have feelings and, all this stuff, but their video games are colorful and they're made for little kids. And she got into them. She won't, so we'd play them and I found myself being like, don't press that because, oh, great. Now, oh, well, all right. Now we're just going to have to go through it again. And like, what am I doing? I'm talking to a fucking 6-year-old. Like they're like, it was just, it was, and even though I knew it, I was saying to myself, like, stop, what is wrong with you? I just couldn't help myself being like, no, press the triangle. Oh, Jesus Christ. All right. Just give me the controller. Like with a kid's game. Like it was ridiculous. So I ended up talking to a therapist and going, there's this. So I'm on that, back on that medication, and it's been very helpful. And I'm just more chill and relaxed, as you should be with a 6-year-old child who's playing a video game or getting ready to go to school. And you know what? It's okay if we're 2 minutes late. It's fine. It's fine.
Or like somebody's not getting into the bathtub quick enough or like brushing their teeth. Like, can you come on? I'm smiling because I have a little section where I wrote something about myself, if kind of time allowed. But after I asked this question, because mine are anxious, irritable.
Mm-hmm.
And there then right underneath, anxiety disorder. And I didn't know I had one until a couple of years ago. And I've always been super irritable. And, Ophelia had really like heightened my irritability. And I woke up one day and I asked Brianna, I was like, don't you ever feel like your nerves are on fire like all the time? And she's like, no. I think you got to get that checked out. And so I went and saw somebody. And of course, I got a therapist, but it's never really come up. And they were like, oh, yeah, you're loaded with it. Yeah, let's put you on this. And 6 months later, and then like tweaking the dose, and we can mm-hmm. have like nice mornings while we're getting out. And
I mean, that's literally the same.
Yeah. Did you have any fears about becoming a dad?
No, just the only fear I had was energy level. Mm. That was kind of it, and but I was ready for it. I was ready for it for a while. I mean, I'm pretty easygoing. I just roll with whatever. And, I've pretty much done that through my life. And, I remember, it sounds like a joke, but having a puppy was a good, training for a kid. I mean, they're vastly different, but the you still have to take care of this thing that can't take care of itself. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, like I have to leave. If I'm at a club or somewhere, I'm seeing a band and, I haven't walked my dog. I got to go home and walk my dog. Mm-hmm. And I got to get up and walk my dog. And if I break a glass, I can't just sweep in the corner and deal with it tomorrow. I got to clean it. So that was actually very good training for having a kid,
I've had some new fathers talk to me about being scared about being a dad or being scared about like, holding their baby for the first time. And I've been thinking about that lately, just about how kind of fucked that is, that some people are so scared and so unfamiliar with holding a baby that they even get that feeling the first time they hold their kid, you know?
Yeah,
it's kind of wild. And I guess it goes to show how disjointed or isolated we are from each other and our families and things.
From that part of life, you know, that exactly. aspect of, you know, being the nurturing caregiver.
Exactly. Especially now when there's no, like, you know, bison to go off and hunt or whatever. And
well, speak for yourself.
What are the most rewarding aspects of being a father to you?
I mean, you know, all the obvious stuff. I like it when I can be proud of her, when she's, I like that you're hopefully putting a good, decent person out there and balancing out the shitty, awful people. And, you know, when she says something that is, interesting, and funny and smart and, you know, her own take on something that I wouldn't have imagined. Those are all, you know, those moments are great. And just, you know, hanging out and just look, if she wasn't my kid, I wouldn't be hanging out with her that much. You know, I mean, because she has all these play dates and stuff and I'll host and chaperone sometimes, you know, you hang out with a bunch of kids and the kids are all great, but I wouldn't hang out with any of them for more than an hour or so, but she's my kid, so I'll hang out with her.
For sure. Ophelia, if it wasn't for Ophelia, I wouldn't keep a loony in, you know, that small pocket you have in your jeans.
Mm-hmm.
She got me to always have a loony in there because we'd go by homeless people. And I'd always be like, well, I don't have any change. And she's like, well, why don't you just always carry a dollar with you? I'm like, I guess
that's interesting.
No good excuse to not. So now I always have a little loonie in, or a toonie.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. I like that.
Would you like to describe your relationship with your father, given everything we've talked about?
Yeah, it wasn't very good. It remains not good. And it was not a real fear because I kind of knew this wouldn't be the case, but there was always a little voice in the back of my head, like, what if it's like a genetic thing that, you know, because my dad was a shitty dad. He was he left when I was 9 and, or no, I just turned 10 actually. And my sister would have been 8 and a half. And then my younger sister would have been 5. And, he just left. And then we found out all this other shit later, that he'd been doing, and he was really irresponsible and selfish and narcissistic and pathological liar, weird lies, you know, all the, you know, big himself up. And, you know, there was that thing that I was like, oh, what if I do that? What if I just go, yeah, this isn't for me, and leave? You know, I knew that that wouldn't be the case, but, and I haven't talked to him since I was 19. So yeah, he might be dead. I don't even know.
Right. Yeah, I've thought about that too. I don't have a great relationship. I've been estranged from my dad for quite some time. And growing up, it was kind of, he was in and out and always kind of like kept me at arm's length. And
how many kids were in your family?
It was just my sister and I.
Uh-huh.
But they divorced when I was 3 or something, and then he moved out of province when I was 6, I think. So anyways, I guess my point is I was always worried about, yeah, becoming like an arm's length dad. And I had similar thoughts about, yeah, is it like a will it be like a genetic thing to worry about? or just, you know, having that behavior imprinted in my psyche, like, will I be prone to that? And it's interesting to see that it's like a little bit of both, you know, like, because I can catch it. I can, like, oh, this is kind of what my brain kind of like would like to react this way, but I can get over it, you know, enough to not let it affect my relationship with my daughter.
You know, as I said, you know, my dad was narcissistic and selfish, and he did the thing that I think a lot of people at some point do, which is you think, God, I want to get the fuck out of this situation. You know, men and women, moms and dads. He just, you know, acted on it, as a bunch of people do. Just going like, yeah, it's not for me. And then just left.
You think it was a generational thing with those guys?
I mean, it certainly was happening. I remember when I was a kid, like, divorce seemed to just explode, and like most of the mo it was an anomaly to have friends who had parents that were together. You know, like that was, I'd say, most of, you know, not a vast majority, but oh, slightly over 50% of my friends, myself included, you know, had single family homes, you know, or a stepmom or stepdad or whatever. Yeah, I think, you know, most were kids from divorce. So I don't know, maybe.
What's next for you, I guess?
You know, as I'm just starting, I'll start once, you know, and then the new year comes, I'll start the slow process of developing more material and doing these sets, that I do here in Brooklyn called Shooting the Shit, Seeing What Sticks. And then I'll do that for a couple months, you know, 2.5, 3.5 months, and then start moving into the next phase where I'll, you know, because I'll do it where I just am riffing, you know, basically. And then I start to like take all the stuff I've got and like try to hone it down and zero in on what's working, what's not working. And then phase two comes in. But, you know, the idea is to go back out on tour with a new set in the fall.
Oh,
So
wow.
be working towards that, and I've been really enjoying doing this podcast I've got, which is called Senses Working Overtime, and it's been fun. I didn't expect to enjoy it as much as I do, but
Right
it's
on.
fun.
I just started listening to the one with you and Bob the other day. I have to listen to
Yeah.
the podcast in chunks, but it's pretty fun so far.
Yeah, it's enjoyable.
I've noticed that you're like really hitting the comedy hard the last decade, hey? Because it seemed like in the aughts especially, there'd be quite a bit of time between albums.
Well, I was working on a couple series. I was
Of course,
doing
yeah,
Arrested
Arrested
Development. That
Development.
was 3 years, and then I did increasingly Poor Decisions of Todd Margaret. That was 3 years.
That was
Well,
so
2 years,
great.
and then and you know, doing movies and stuff in between. So yeah, you know, but now that I'm not doing as much of that other stuff, and I really enjoy doing stand-up, so that's not a bummer.
Right. Is it kind of by choice then that you're doing like more stand-up and not doing as many movies these days?
No. I just that's just how it's shaken out in the last 3 years or so.
I've been meaning to watch that one you made about where you played the butterfly collector.
Oh, Dark Divide. Yeah, that's based on a, I mean, there's some artistic liberties that were taken, but that's all based on a real guy and his real experience. And you know, he really did hike that trail, and you know, and I met with them a bunch, and we shot there. We shot on the trail. It's fucking gorgeous. It's crazy. It's beautiful. I mean, if nothing else, the movie is kind of stunning visually. It's just, you're deep in that. What do they call it? The prehistoric woods? Is that right? Prehistoric forest, something like that. But it's amazing. It's beautiful. Parts of it are very rugged, and there are these lava tubes that we shot in.
Oh, cool.
Crazy, crazy, like real lava tubes that are, you know, 50 feet high, and you're the air is weird, and it's like there's no light, and it's crazy.
Right on.
We shot in the real ones, and yeah, and the, you know, frigid water, and the most, easily the most grueling thing I've ever done. But yeah, it was cool. And again, it's just, you know, visually it's beautiful. It's we're by Mount Adams, Mount Hood, all that. It was great.
Right on. Do you hike much?
Not like that, but I will go on a hike, and I like walking in the woods and trails and stuff. Yeah. I enjoy it.
Are there any words of wisdom that you'd like to leave for dads or future dads out there listening?
Patience, and lots of patience. Know when to not, you know when to talk like an adult to them, and talk at your level, and know when not to talk like an adult and to talk at their level. Those are important things to feel out too. And the best advice I ever got was, don't ever take anything personally.
Do you have a favorite dad joke?
I don't. Give me one.
Did you hear about the circus fire?
No.
It was intense.
Oh. I don't think she's not there yet for those jokes, but I mean, I make them on my own. I do a lot of dumb, silly jokes. But we're still, she's very much in the fart face, poopy, you know, poopy butt face section of humor.
All right. That was the almighty David Cross on the Rad Dads Show. I can't believe it. Thank you so much to David for joining us. And I want to thank you for listening. The Rad Dad Show is a labor of love, and people are always asking us, what's the best way to support you? To tell you the truth, the best way is just to share this episode. Share our posts on social media, tell your friends, or hey, drop us a review on iTunes or Spotify. I know those things are easy, but they mean so much to us. And if you take anything away from an episode, please let us know. We love hearing those stories too. And if you're looking for more Rad Dads content, find us wherever you get your podcasts, or give us a follow on social media. On Instagram, you can find us at @rad_dads_show, and on Facebook, and Twitter, and TikTok at @raddadsshow. You can also head over to YouTube to watch all these interviews as well. But wherever you're watching or listening, don't forget to hit that subscribe button. It helps us so much. Lastly, Rad Dads is first and foremost a community organization aimed at positive parenting. You can check out what we do over at raddadsyeg.com. That's raddadsyeg.com. Thanks for tuning in. In the meantime, and in between time, stay rad.